quite controversial as a result. And it was funny how even as they gave him this Lifetime Achievement Award, recognizing that this guy did change music, you could feel them dancing around the edge, kind of being like, while yes, it might be controversial, there's no denying its impact or whatever. Because there's certainly some people that are going, we shouldn't be honoring this guy. He's basically ruined music. Of course, nobody said that. At least nobody said it out loud.
I mean, he definitely made history, that's for sure. Yay!
Hello.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Brushes and Keys. I'm Angela Bermudez.
And I'm Austin. How are you?
Very good. I'm recovering from a weird eye infection that I got from this weekend. I was wearing contacts on Saturday that there was this party.
Special merit.
Yeah, it's actually an event it's a Lifetime Achievement Award event. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna put on contacts just so I train for tomorrow, which is the big day. And I didn't realize those were so old that basically my eyes got some weird, you keep saying it's an infection, but I don't see anything weird. I just can't see. But I guess that is
well, the
what
fact
it
that
is.
Your eyes got swollen, it's the fact that it wasn't just irritation on the eyes. You had
bags. Wait.
Under
I don't want
eyes.
Them
that...
to picture some Last of Us weird shit because it wasn't swollen.
Oh, come on, it's not that. Everyone has eye infections from time to time.
It wasn't as swollen. It was just like I was crying, like my eyes were watery all the time and I don't know. So
and
I blame
very light sensitive.
Yeah, I blame the contacts. I tossed them that night and I was like, okay, never mind. I'm not going to wear this anymore. And yeah. And for the next few days, my sight was like if somebody put a bit of like this jelly thing.
Oh, yeah, Vaseline.
Vaseline. Yeah, like I was like my eyeballs were covered by that and like the light was like sparse and everything felt blurry. Anyway, it was pretty bad. So now I feel better. Pain is not as strong and my sight is doing better. But I'll be careful next time. I'm just gonna, you know, like label the contacts so I know when they expire because that's a freakishly rookie mistake on my part.
Yeah, it was not pleasant to feel like you couldn't look into the light in any comfortable way.
Mm-hmm. My eyes now, they look a little like sad. Like my eyelids are angled.
Drooping.
Yeah. It looks like angled down, you know. It feels like I was crying for like a fucking week or something.
I mean, you have been. Your eyes basically were watering nonstop. Yeah. So.
No, but it's okay.
What was what you kind of quickly mentioned was that the thing that you wore those contacts to was what's called the special merit ceremony that is happens the day before the Grammys, and it's where they give – it's a much smaller ceremony, probably 300 people instead of like 15,000 or something like that in the audience. And the majority of the people who were in the audience at the special merit ceremony are current year nominees and their guests. Mm-hmm. I think anybody can go, but because they pair, like any Recording Academy member can go, but because they pair it with the nominee reception where they give you your little medal and stuff, take your photo as a nominee, it tends to be the nominees who show up. As a result, it's one of those things that the general public, and they don't stream it, obviously. I'm sure they record it and it, you know, maybe past ones are available on their website or something, but, it's definitely not streamed and it's definitely something that I think is not particularly publicly known.
I don't think I saw any cameras or anything. Like it was just us.
I'm certain they filmed it. There's no way they wouldn't film it. Every one of them is always historic in terms of like, there are often people who make their last.
No, but I mean like one of those like big cranes and stuff that we saw the next day. I didn't see any of that.
Well, no, because that's for TV. That's like cinematic.
Right.
You know, this would be more like archival, just a couple of cameras on tripods in, you know, one to each side, and they can have two angles of coverage, and that's that. I'm almost certain I saw the cameras towards the back, like where a movie projector would be, you know, like, you know, right at the, basically at the entrance of the center back wall. I'm 95% certain. Nonetheless, what was your impression of that event? Obviously, that you were new to that. So
yes.
What was your...
I think you were right. I almost didn't go because I was like, I need to finish my dress for tomorrow. And Austin was like, you should come, you should come. It's really inspiring. And it's actually really, it's probably the best part of the whole thing. And he convinced me to come and I don't regret it. It was quite inspiring and fun. And the intimacy of being, you know, a small crowd, being with these big legends, that people that actually make history, that felt awesome. So can you actually mention who was there, who was awarded?
Yeah, I'm pulling up the list, actually. So the idea is Lifetime Achievement Awards for people who have just like massively overwhelming contributions to the music industry for a variety of reasons. And so in some cases, it was performers. In some cases, it's people who have made technical innovations in how music is made. You know, like, for example, one of the people that they honored was Jim Stewart, was the guy who was the founder of Stax Records, pretty legendary label. Ellis Marsalis, Branford and Winton's dad, who was a famous, like, incredible jazz pianist in addition to being apparently this pretty legendary educator, music educator. Ma Rainey, the so-called mother of blues, who was one of the first kind of like stars of the music industry. I think they said she started recording in the 20s.
Wow.
And made like 100 recordings over a five-year period that are like the kind of the first big blues recordings.
In cases like that, they give the award, this is the person, but obviously, you know, like they have to look for the closest person to the person. So how do they manage that?
Yeah, well, they just, it's whoever's effectively the next of kin. You know, I think it was the grandchildren of Ma Rainey, or maybe even great grandchildren. So one that really stood out was this guy named Dr. Andy Hildebrand, who was the inventor of Auto-Tune, who was basically just a software engineer, and was just kind of challenged by a friend to develop a better way to deal with software-based pitch correction. And he talked about how he was building it. The way he described it made it sound like he was approaching it through the same lens as the way compressors and limiters work in music, which is that you can do things, you can impact the signal in real time. And one of the ways that you can adjust the, like one of the parameters that you can adjust is how quickly the software reacts. So for example, if I have a really loud sound and I want a compressor to pull the volume down, I can decide how fast I want the volume to come down. Like if I want it to be near instantaneous, it will duck the sound in a way that you hear it. Like within, you know, the moment the loud sound happens, you'll hear the volume go poof. Or if you want it to be really subtle, it pulls it down gradually. This is one of those kinds of just audio tech things. And he said how when he was designing Auto-Tune with a similar ability, it had basically a reaction speed. And the way he phrased it made it sound like, just kind of for fun, he thought it could be interesting if I set that, if one of the possible settings of that speed would be zero. So it would effectively instantaneously lock the pitch to whatever it thinks it's supposed to be. And he said that inadvertently creates this kind of like pitch accurate robot voice, because it doesn't nudge the pitch slowly and subtly in the right direction. It instantly moves it, which makes it sound not real. And so Cher happened to be the first major artist to use that as a creative choice. And the way he described it was he corrupted music forever or something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
And Rick Beato, recently did a YouTube video talking about AI in music and how he thinks that it's going to be a big problem because we've been conditioned for 20 years by auto-tune to hear robotic music as just normal music. And so he thinks AI is basically being given an advantage because we're already used to very manufactured production. And so it's sort of, auto-tune is quite controversial as a result. And it was funny how even as they gave him this Lifetime Achievement Award, recognizing that this guy did change music, you could feel them dancing around the edge, kind of being like, well, yes, it might be controversial. There's no denying its impact or whatever. Because there's certainly some people that are going, we shouldn't be honoring this guy. He's basically ruined music. Of course, nobody said that. At least nobody said it out loud.
I mean, he definitely made history, that's for sure.
I mean, look, those tools and Melodyne and are essential parts. Like the way they described it in the video that I loved was pitchiness was forever a choice. I loved that. I realized we kind of glossed over the format, but they would basically, because this was not a long ceremony like the Grammys mm-hmm. where they have to give out 90 awards, it was like 2 or 3 hours dedicated to 10 people. What that meant was they would show like a 5-minute video about the person's biography and stuff, and mm-hmm. then the person and or
family,
you know, mm-hmm. their family or whoever would come up and speak. So each person really got a decent amount of time. Right. So they had Slick Rick, who's like one of the Generation One hip hop sort of inventors, mm-hmm. almost like one of the very first ever
hip hop stars.
Yeah, that was hilarious. He walked up on stage. I had forgotten his name. I've seen photos of him because he very memorably always wears an eye patch. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember why that is or what's the story there, if he had an injury or if it's from birth. I don't actually know the story of why he has. I'm sure it's very well known. It's just because hip hop's not my area of expertise. But I've seen like whenever you look into like early like 80s hip hop, I've seen his face, and so it was cool to see him in person. And yeah, he walked up on stage wearing this bright purple coat, like a proper hip hop star. Yeah. He's all decked out, and then he takes the coat and he goes, "You like this coat?" And then he threw it on the ground and was like, "That was like $30 or whatever from the Macy's women's department," which was
very funny. I forgot that. Yeah, it was pretty charming.
He was
and
great.
And then we saw the Nirvana guys also. That was the highlight for me.
Yeah, having Dave Grohl there. You got your photo. You got your selfie with Dave Grohl.
Oh, yeah, I still haven't posted it, but yeah, I will.
You see how the intimacy of the event and the fact that most of the people there are current nominees, he was more relaxed because it's not fans, like in the traditional sense, and the fans that would be at a concert.
Right.
They might be fans, but they're also on some level their colleagues because everybody there is part of the industry. Yeah. And so
I think you were right. I liked that event much more because that also the intimacy, but also there was food. Everybody was chill. The environment is completely different. You know, let's just enjoy and celebrate these people that changed music.
It was great seeing Nirvana there, the current surviving members, as it were.
Yeah.
Of course, they of course mentioned Kurt Cobain, but what was cool is that Nirvana is very famously associated with coming out of Seattle, and that there was kind of like different cities have always had kind of like their claim to fame. Like New York and Chicago are very jazz cities. Motown is a Detroit thing. You know, country is a Nashville thing. Uh-huh. And there's obviously been like L.A., and Oakland is the very whole like West Coast hip hop. Like different cities have always been kind of famously the origin point of certain movements. And obviously in the 90s, the Pacific Northwest rock scene with Nirvana is like another one of those. And what was cool is a band that I honestly kind of forgot about and I've never been particularly an expert on is the band Heart. That's frontlined by the two sisters, Nancy Wilson and Ann mm-hmm. Wilson. And they had Nancy Wilson there. And what was cool is like when the Nirvana guys got up there and they were like, you know, they pointed at Nancy Wilson in the audience. And he said, like, you know, Hart was one of those, like, they saw each other as colleagues.
Right.
Like, Nirvana obviously achieved.
She was the one that pointed that out. Like, well, she was.
They both did.
Oh, really?
No, they both. Yeah, they said Nirvana was on deck first because
oh.
I didn't realize Hart was being honored. Yeah. And then when they pointed the crowd and said Hart, I was like, oh,
yeah,
that must be still coming in the show. Hearing, you know, Nancy Wilson talk about rock seemed like kind of a boys
right.
thing. And they were just kind of like, the way she phrased it was so great. She goes, I don't want to, I'm not a Beatles fan. I want to be the Beatles.
Oh, yes.
Was how she phrased it.
I love it.
You know, like, why not just be a rock star?
Yeah.
And
you know,
it was very cool.
You know what I love? And I might sound, you know, a little funny for some. But what I love about her take on it is that she didn't make a point of being a woman in that area. Like, she just wanted to be a rock star.
She didn't portray it as being a victim.
Yeah, she didn't.
Just because there were very few like power rocker
exactly
types as women before
exactly.
her. She
I appreciate that. Yeah. I feel like that's like I respect that.
She made it sound like, yeah, she made it sound like she didn't assume it was a hindrance. It was more just like she didn't care.
Yeah.
She didn't. It was. She made it sound like the specific phrasing she used, if I remember accurately, was I didn't care about gender
exactly.
then and I don't care about it now.
Yes.
She said something very close to that.
Oh, yes.
And yeah, she was awesome. And but for me the highlights, I really thought it was cool seeing, remember the guy Henry Diltz, the photographer,
oh,
who
yes.
was like at Woodstock,
oh,
and
God.
Shot all those famous album covers,
so
and
cool.
and you know, talked about how he got invited to a last second rehearsal.
They called him to give the Grammy. And
yeah, he fell walking up on stage.
He fell on stage.
Yeah, he tripped.
But he's like 90. And he was like, everybody was like, holy shit. And he was like, that was on purpose.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, everybody has to say that.
So
he can't
fun.
Be 90,
he's,
but hey,
no,
can't be
I know, I'm
either.
Exaggerating. But yeah, he's an old person.
84.
There you go.
Jesus, a lot closer to 90 than I was expecting. I mean, it would have to be to have been a photographer at Woodstock, but
yeah,
like the official photographer for
yeah.
Woodstock.
Who?
All these legendary photos of like Hendrix and Bob Dylan
yeah.
and
mm-hmm. Debbie Bowie.
And I loved the story he told about where he said a friend called him and said, hey, can you come down to this like warehouse? There's a rehearsal for a band and they want to have someone photograph the rehearsal. And he said he was on stage trying to take photos of each individual band member, and he got yelled at to be told to get off the stage and take photos from somewhere else. And he said the way that it was explained was, Ringo told me, I'm the drummer, you're the photographer. And he was like, because he said, think of everybody on this planet as your teacher, and the people that are the most difficult to deal with are your best teachers, are the teachers that have the potential to teach you the most. So he said something like, I learned a lot
yeah.
from the Beatles.
I know.
Which made it sound
so
like they were
awesome.
Not easy. They were not the easiest sort of customers,
yeah.
as it were.
As I was saying earlier today, like if you are in a level that can make you, you know, say, fuck this, like there's no... How did I phrase that? Like,
yeah, you were basically saying like if you've reached a point
like
if you're
you
know,
so successful
kind of
and
earned
famous
the right.
And, yeah, exactly. You earn the respect of others regardless, I guess. I don't know. Obviously that
doesn't justify having a huge ego though.
It doesn't justify to be an asshole, but I think it's pretty understandable if anybody else around doesn't have as much power as you. So, I get that. But I don't share the philosophy of being an asshole.
I can very much appreciate demanding respect.
Yeah.
But you also have to be prepared to give respect to everybody, including those who, you know, like when you go to a hotel and the maid shows up to clean the room, they deserve just as much respect as Paul McCartney. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? Like
mm-hmm.
there shouldn't be a hierarchy when it comes to respect.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But it's also fair for you to expect respect. I do
right.
think that is fair.
Right.
And sometimes people get a little lopsided in that, and their ego is often the reason why. And he didn't really talk shit about the Beatles, but he did definitely say the people that gave you the hardest time are your best teachers, and they were great teachers or something. He said it in a kind of
yeah.
sly way. But so he was awesome. Just I'm always I always relish the chance to be in the room, and you know, we didn't talk to him, but just knowing that we were in the room with somebody that witnessed history and documented it personally, mm-hmm. that is an astounding thing to be privy to. I mean, I found this is why I kept pressuring you. You got to come to this thing because
yeah, for me, I left everything I was doing, I left it aside. And then that night I came back home and started working on my handbag and my alien egg bag.
Your Xeno egg. Yeah, it was like, which was awesome.
I basically, the day before, I just made the structure. That bag is made of foam, of course, because cosplayer. But it's an easy material to work with. So I did that, and it was like black. And that was it. That night I painted it, and I placed all of the like ring stones, and yeah, it was a little, but I don't regret it. It was really, really good to go.
Oh yeah, I mean,
very inspiring.
The Grammys are fun. It's a circus. The main ceremony is fun, but it's obviously very kind of clinical because they move through as many awards as they possibly can as quickly as they can. Mm-hmm. The big show is fine. It's a little tiring after a while, but
so it's like three main events, just so we're clear. That night before, that is like this super cool thing. The day of the Grammys, that in the morning, is the awards that people don't see on TV that are not the main thing.
Yeah, it's the telecast and the premiere ceremony.
Okay, the premiere ceremony, that's what I mean. And
yeah, that's the one where they give out like 75 Grammys.
Right.
The telecast is where they give out like 10
they
more.
They put rock in that event, the first one, which I'm just so amazed. Like, obviously I don't follow what's new or anything, but I can't believe they put rock as a secondary category among the others, you know, because that is such a big thing for me, and I bet for many of us here. And I can't believe rock has gone so unpopular.
Yeah, it's not the dominant part of the culture.
So sad.
Like hip hop and pop and dance music are like a million times larger in the culture.
I know that than rock reminds these days. Me that we got questions from Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Well, we'll get to that in just 1 second. I'll just say that the other people that were nominated in the Lifetime Achievement Award was Bobby McFerrin. Who he couldn't not be Bobby McFerrin, which was very charming, you know, getting the audience to all start singing. And that's something he always does. And it was just so wonderful to be part of that.
He's best known by the Don't Worry, Be Happy song. And he literally just came on stage and started singing. And at the end, he was like, just be happy. Don't treat others badly. Chill, you know. And that was his whole thing. He was so charming.
He was extremely on brand. If you've ever seen him before, I've seen a bunch of his performances and things on YouTube of him, and he was doing his Bobby McFerrin thing. And what I loved was that it wasn't like some act. Clear that he just is that way, because he had his grandkids and stuff, and they were kind of like, yeah, this is just grandpa. The last name I'll mention was Nile Rodgers. Who is just such a legend. He's played guitar on a million records. He's a songwriter. He's a producer. He's just one of those guys who's had his hand in 1,000 things. He's worked with literally everyone that you can think of. I remember when Journey got Grammy nominated, he tweeted some kind of congrats at me, and I remember being a little mildly starstruck. And so it was very cool to see him get a Lifetime Achievement. And he got so emotional. He literally was fighting tears the whole time. And it was just, I just loved it. I was like, man, this guy, he's one of those people that you go, how did he not get this award years ago?
Because
he's such a legend. But so was Nirvana. And so and the Supremes, were honored. Like, so it's like that every year. There's always people that are just like, fuck, they really changed the world, didn't they? It was awesome. I remember it was so much more memorable last time I went, which was 10 years ago, than all the rest of the experience. And it was the same again this time. So, yeah, I'm happy to make that the focal point of our conversation, because it's the thing that doesn't generate the big headlines. But it's just so – it's one of those that it motivates me. It makes me want to go work harder, because I'm like, look at what these people did, not just to their little niche, but to the world.
It's
they
so
made the world better.
How things are right now, because – this event was, for me, obviously, it was so inspiring, and it makes you think about what you're doing and what do you want to do in the future. And I didn't understand why this has to be such a private thing. Like, they don't make a point of sharing, you know, like highlights or something on the main event. I don't know. It's just so bizarre.
No, I mean, it's like you. I totally disagree. The intimacy of it made it still far more enjoyable.
Exactly. No, it's so enjoyable, but I feel like a lot of people should see it.
What? They do film it. What the hell? What is she whining about?
I don't know.
I took her out. Was that a yawn or?
She was kind of like whining and yawning at the same time.
Anyway, they do. When I was Googling just now to find the list of the names to make sure I wasn't forgetting any, they've already got most of these on YouTube. So it's not like this thing is hidden from view. It's just the event is more intimate. I mean, to me, that's far better. If you're honoring these legends, you don't want them getting mobbed by
random people. On the show, like on TV, like they should like put some like highlights on TV. I don't know. I mean, look, the average person doesn't care. I know.
The average person doesn't even watch the Grammys, period. Their ratings are lower.
Probably because it's not inspiring anymore. Probably because the music industry is...
Away. The music industry is now, it's TikTok and it's YouTube and the Grammys represent an old school, you see it every year, like, you know, it's the same with the Oscars. Yeah. The world has changed. All these are slightly dinosauric in their way.
Yeah. Hence my reaction. It's pretty sad.
Yeah. It just kind of is, I don't know, maybe it is, but I see it as just sort of like it is what it is, but I don't really have an emotional sad or otherwise. That said, well, let's look at some of the questions. I don't want to make this too long. I know we have a mutual interest in trying to be a little brief with these. So, why don't you read some of your favorite questions?
Yeah, I have here a screenshot from all of the Instagram questions and Facebook and stuff. So here, let's start with Jason Nielsen. Are there any good after parties?
Probably.
Yes, there are. You told me the Academy hosts a big after party after the main show, basically.
Yeah, but I suspect what they're asking is, like, for example, every year after the Oscars, there's like famous, like each studio has a party. Vanity Fair famously always has a big Oscar party. And these are extremely exclusive things that you have to know people to get into.
Right.
I can't imagine the Grammys don't have the same. Like, for example, I don't think Adele went to the official after party.
I think that is more, that is like a personal choice, I guess. I imagine they are all invited and they go if they want to.
I would put money that not a single one of the big stars goes because it has thousands of people that are, because these are people that have, like, we couldn't have walked up to their seats, for example. Like, we could wander around, mm-hmm. but if we had gotten anywhere close to their seats, the security would have stopped us.
Probably.
Because these are all people that, you know, they have armed security who live at their house. Like, these are celebrities on the highest possible level.
Right.
And so they have their own parties. They have their own events.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah, that's true.
But the main party is a big thing. And but we didn't really stick around much.
Austin has to, because he was a nominee, they offer VIP tickets and he got the ability to go to any of those things, the party as well. But we're not made for that.
Honestly, my phone was basically dead and I was actually quite concerned about getting home. I was like, if we don't, like, because the signal was super low and the signal was all jammed up with everyone's cell phones. And so I was like, if we don't call an Uber, like, I didn't bring a charger or anything.
I have my phone, so you should never feel worried about that.
It was just
physically unattractive to go to a party after this thing. We woke up at fucking, you know, 6 a.m. and we're up until, you know, the end. So, yeah, it was pretty tiring.
Yeah, we basically just wandered around briefly and were kind of like, all right, good night.
Yeah, I know. We didn't even stick to the ending. We didn't even see the, like, album of the year or anything.
Well, they were doing it when we were in the hallway. Yeah.
I needed to go to the bathroom, and then suddenly I hear Adele singing, you know, the music that they put in the back, and I was like, is that Adele? And you were like, oh, I think she got the whatever award.
Yeah.
So yeah. I kind of heard it, but we didn't see it, and we decided to just leave. We needed to rest.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Arias, he says, how did you get invited? I already answered. Austin was a nominee because, yeah, he's so awesome.
I guess we shouldn't assume that people realize, like, would all know that they added a category for video game music this year. And video games were eligible for what they called the score soundtrack for visual media category,
mm-hmm.
which meant film, TV, and games all sharing the Grammy equally. Mm-hmm. But Journey was the only one that ever got nominated in that, and they decided, you know, clearly games are not, like, they're getting dominated by film. Mm-hmm. Even TV was always getting dominated by film,
mm-hmm.
with rare exception. Like, for example, this year, all five of the nominees in the film and TV category were all films. So, like, TV, you know, is always struggling to keep up with the movies and games far more so. And so they decided to make it its own category. So, and of course, worth mentioning that Stephanie Okonomou, the composer of Assassin's Creed, Valhalla's DLC, The Siege of Paris, and The Dawn of Ragnarok, is who won. The other nominees were Bear for Call of Duty Vanguard, Richard Jenkins for Marvel Guardians of the Galaxy, Chris Tin for a strategy game called Old World from the former lead designer of Civ 4, and what am I leaving out?
You.
Oh, and me. Yeah, for Fireteam.
Yep.
So yeah, it was quite fun. It was also fun being able to hang with Bear so much. Normally, we normally have to kind of be a bit brief because we're always
finally,
in the middle of stuff.
Yeah, I finally met him. I saw him a few seconds to, like, in some other event, but I never met him before. Then we went, had lunch in a nice sushi restaurant, and we told stories about how we met the other, and that was fun.
Indeed.
Cool. Next question.
All right. Yeah.
Anna Reese. Was there any service or dynamic that surprised you?
Well, you're the best person to answer this because I knew exactly what to expect. I've been there before.
I guess the service that I enjoyed the most was the huge table seafood on the...
So fixated on the food. That's so funny.
It was so good. I've never seen so much. Like, it was huge. Like, tons of crab and lobster and shrimp and pasta. And then I was like filling up my plate and started eating. And then I realized there's another table on the other side of the room with hot stuff, meat and rice. And I was like, oh man, I already feel full.
That's so funny.
So yeah, that's my answer. It was so good. And they had drinks and desserts as well, like lovely towers of cake and cupcakes and
very good
brownies,
snickerdoodle,
and also macarons and cookies, and oh my god, it was the best. And that was for Saturday.
Yeah, this was at the special.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly, the reception, the nominee reception.
That's where I was like, oh my god, that's Dave Grohl, I need a picture with him. And so I went, and then you pushed me, and kind of like, it was such a cool day. I think that was my favorite.
Oh, for sure.
Next question, Mariana Marin. I want to know about the distribution of the seats. If producers go to one side, artists on another, etc. And if it's possible to see somebody super famous in the bathroom, for example. Also, how is the security? Are there a lot of bodyguards or are people more relaxed?
Well, for the premiere ceremony, it's general seating. You literally sit anywhere you want. You know, because that's the ceremony where they're giving away the awards to, let's be honest, the less famous people.
The rock stars, dude.
They're not really worried about security and stuff. But I have seen, when I was there 10 years ago, you know, the dance music was in the premiere ceremony and Skrillex won and he was there. And he got up on stage and thanked everyone and sat back down. And Taylor Swift also won for something, and she was there and got up and said thank you to everybody. And I remember everyone being surprised she was there because obviously she was nominated for like Album of the Year in the main show, uh-huh. but she showed up, she won separately in one of the, I cannot for the life of me remember what it was, but she, you know, mm-hmm. but security, yeah, it's, I mean, look, they do the main show in the what's now called the Crypto Arena, formerly the Staples Center. It's a giant arena that seats like 20,000 people. And technically everybody in there is a member of the Recording Academy or the guest of a Recording Academy member. You know, like, for example, my agent was there. You were there. You're not member. You're not voting members of the Recording Academy, but you're directly connected to a member. So even with a size of an audience, nearly 20,000 people, it's all still, shall we say, insiders. But, you know, there are some people that are very new to the industry and would act very much like fans if they bumped yep. into Taylor Swift in the bathroom. So needless
honestly,
to say,
I,
they keep it pretty segregated.
Her, I will never ask her for a picture.
Yeah, but the point being to the point of the question, like, there is some internal separation for sure with the main ceremony. We it was, you know, it's all separate. Like, we had yeah. we had sort of VIP seating
right.
that was better than a lot of the other seats. But if we had tried to walk down onto the floor where their mm-hmm. tables were,
yep.
I guarantee you they would have stopped us. I've right. never even tried, but you can yep. see the wall. You Who can knows? See the kind of like, there's like a fence.
Ah, well, there you go. I didn't pay attention to that. Here's the next question. Yeah, yeah. Do you speak to any celebrity? I did.
Yeah, Dave Grohl counts.
We asked him for a picture and he didn't understand what you meant or something. He kind of like started mimicking you like, oh, for her or something. Like, he was making fun of you somehow. I don't know why. It was so super quick.
And well, somebody took a photo with him and then it looked like he was about to leave. So I just said, hey, you mind if we get one of those too? And he acted like I was talking about the girl or something who had just taken a photo with him. He's like, you want one of those? But he was also holding a little like Hawaiian lei flower necklace. He was holding it in his hand because they were giving him out at the event. And I jokingly said, no, we want your necklace.
But he didn't hear me.
And so I let it go.
Yeah, I didn't hear that. I was just so like, oh my God, it's him. But yeah, it was funny. He was pretty, very charming and funny. It made me laugh. Gerardo Castro Don Hera. Why does commercial music feel more decadent?
Versus what kind of music?
I guess.
I mean, all music
is commercial.
I guess
years before.
It's just a false dichotomy. I reject the idea that there's like a difference between art and commerce. Every artist in the whole of history of humanity has tried to monetize their work with very, very rare exceptions. Like, yes, there's hobbyists, but professionals try to sell their work. And I'm a pro-market person. I believe that that's a good thing because it means that if people like your stuff, they're willing to pay for it. And that's a good signal that you're doing something right because people like it. They like it more than they like their own money. They're like, I would rather have your CD than this $5 or whatever. Right. Like, that's a pretty strong statement of support and a lot better one than just someone going, thumbs up, bro, I like it. Now, obviously, there's a lot of nuance I'm leaving out, but in its pure idealistic sense of how the market works, I support it. So the idea that music somehow didn't used to be commercial or whatever, that I reject that.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I mean, the Beatles are some of the best-selling musicians yeah. in the history of humanity.
It's true.
Actually, maybe the most.
Very good choice. Like good taste, I mean.
That doesn't mean that
it's
making
music
for the soul, yeah, like chasing the dollar is not a great way to make an artistic statement, potentially. Like if all you care about is earning money and you don't care about expressing yourself, chances are you're going to make something pretty weak.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that if you sell a thing and it makes you millions and millions of dollars, you are like a sellout.
Okay. Javi Soto says, which one was the best performance in your opinion? I think... In terms of the staging, the TikTok song that I don't know the name.
The controversial one, the Satan worship
the
song of Sam Smith.
With the fire. It was real fire, and we felt the heat from where we were sitting. It was awesome. I liked how it looked in person. I don't know how it looked on TV. What was the singer?
Kim Petras.
Ah, okay. Uh-huh. And the other Ben or Sam, I think.
Sam Smith. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was impressive. I think actually I really quite liked during the premiere ceremony when Ravi Shankar's daughter Anushka Shankar performed. Remember, nice. She played sitar.
Yeah, I have the video.
And then the other woman sang. I can't remember the other woman's name, but
it was so cool. I liked the background that they used for that.
It was very beautiful and very meditative.
Yeah. Dallas, any fun goings on the red carpet?
Not really. The red carpet is always a bit of a chaotic, like, you know, take your photo, quick, move down. And right. The photographers, look here. And then look, everybody. And you just, and they're trying to get a lot of people through. And we were in a rush because they literally put the soundtracks as the first category. So we had this urgency to get off the red carpet because we're like, if we're late, they're going to skip us. We're all going to, because we were all moving together.
Yep.
Stephanie and Bear and Jermaine Franco, who was there, and she ended up winning for the score to Encanto. We were all moving as a group, basically clustered around Thomas from White Bear. it wasn't
super,
like...
super quick, and we couldn't see anybody. Like, once you're in, you're in. You can't go back.
You could. You absolutely were allowed to. It just was risky.
It's also like, it's a hallway. It's not an open space, and there's no room. The only room they have was for photographers and then the people that's walking the red carpet. So that's why I'm saying I don't think there's a chance for us to look, just if we want to see any celebrity or whatever, I don't think that that's possible to just go back and stick with the camera people.
It'd be pretty awkward.
Yep. Epic H Villa. Any food? Was it noisy? Was everyone packed in like sardines? Any socializing? Were you seeing spots from all the camera shots? Was it exciting? Was it exhausting? Will you 10/10 recommend?
Yeah, we answered all of those. I mean, we've literally hit every one of those already.
Questions? But yes.
Yeah, no, it's...
all yes to everything, I guess. Everyone was packed and we socialized and there were a lot of cameras, and yes, it's exhausting. And yes, I will recommend. I hope you keep getting nominations because it's pretty fun. I liked the dressing up process also and the making.
It did. It was fun to dress up in an alien theme outfit, and it made me think, like, if I would be fortunate enough to be nominated again, it raises a fun question on how to stylize. To the project.
I hope I get another chance to keep making statements.
We were the only ones sort of in costume, as it were, right. Although Bear did have a decidedly Christopher Judge look to him, which was pretty funny, especially considering that Bear was not actually nominated for God of War. He was nominated for Call of Duty. But in any case, all right. Any others?
Here's the next one from Chris Versus on Instagram. Do you think the glory days of such an event are over? Seems to be a colossal circle jerk now.
It was always a circle jerk. But honestly, maybe. It might be, you know, the Grammys came out of a very different era where labels ruled the industry, and the fact that the biggest hits were defined by being the most viral on TikTok this year shows that the dynamic has changed enormously. And so, you know, at the same time, like, the number of people that watch Jeff Keighley's Game Awards is like 10 times the number of people that watch the Grammys. So it might be that those days are over for the Grammys. It might not be 50 million people watching the Grammys, although I think it was like 15 million. It was up a lot from last year. Mm. I don't think that, like, the concept of a big awards show or whatever is dead. It just might be that this particular one is. But the Oscars have also been trending downward the last bunch of years as well.
Let's close with this last question from Roa Sender. Does traffic get heavy when do you leave your place for the event? That's
such an LA question. especially considering that Beyonce was literally stuck in traffic and missed her first Grammy win. She literally won a Grammy and wasn't able to be there because she was in she was in traffic.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I mean because we knew that we were literally on deck first. Like, they read the video game category at like 12:45.
Yeah.
At literally just after afternoon.
Right.
So we beat all the traffic, although it was very difficult to figure out where in the hell to get dropped off correctly in order to...
Yeah, because they closed the red carpet street around the building, and it's quite confusing, and nobody knows where to do it. It's a big block. And so we had to like to basically walk around it to get in.
It was a little bit of a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was. We still. I kind of figured that would happen, so I left. I planned for us to leave quite conservatively early, and then we ended up using all of the time allotted.
Yeah.
And so we were on time, but if we had left any later, it would have been slightly panicked.
Yes. Yeah, that was not a fun moment, but we made it, so yay. But anyway, I guess that's it. I imagine you picked your album of the day based on what we've been talking.
I did choose an album of the day, yes. I wanted to use the album of the day as my excuse to correct the record. When Kim Petras, and with all respect to that song, Unholy, which I fully acknowledge is like genuinely very memorable.
Earworm.
Very earwormy. And pretty cool song. The lyrics are a little funny, but mostly just because I think most pop music lyrics are kind of lame.
That's nothing new.
That's, yeah, no shock there. But Kim Petras made a comment of saying, I'm the first trans Grammy winner during the acceptance speech. My Spidey sense tingled. Like, that can't be accurate. And sure enough, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
One of the heroes of my corner, the composer world, Wendy Carlos, who was originally born Walter Carlos and transitioned in 1968, won three Grammys in 69, including the category that doesn't exist anymore. They used to have a classical album of the year. They had like album of the year, the main album of the year, and then a second album of the year under the domain of classical. And her album switched on Bach, which is like one of the pioneering synth albums of all time. One, and this was post-transition, or at least mid kind of transition. There's some interesting history there in terms of how long it took from Walter Carlos to become Wendy Carlos, because it was like a multi-year process for her, not just surgically, or like appearance and what, but also kind of emotionally. It's an interesting story. And ultimately a very positive one, because Wendy Carlos is universally celebrated and nobody really fixates on the trans part. It's like she's just a genius. But if that's the thing we're fixating on, I'm a believer in credit where it's due. So I wanted to make Switched on Bach by Wendy Carlos the album of the day. Today, I know there was a Nintendo Direct Press event, and Mike Bithell shared some of his Tron game in that as well. And considering Wendy was the original Tron composer, I imagine there was some homage to her happening on the Nintendo Press event today as well. So it's all the more reason to make that the album of the day.
Excellent choice. Well, Austin, thank you so much for taking a little time for this. It's always so nice to hear from you. And... yeah, you're very busy.
That's so silly.
No, I I actually mean it. Jokes aside, I appreciate that you take time to do this. It's a big deal.
No, it's a pleasure. I will say one last thing. Because the Grammys are only in 2023, first acknowledging video games, it's easy to forget that for 40, give or take, years, composers have been writing awesome game music. And so I will read a list of some of the composers that, if this category had existed all along, I think undoubtedly would have won before this year and deserved to have won.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they helped really shape gaming. And I just found myself thinking, usually the Grammys, it takes a year or two, but once a new genre emerges, they tend to add it.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, games, you know, are a little different because we're not technically a music genre. We're a music medium, like movies. Here are some of the composers who I think are worthy of recognition that I think would have had a real shot at Grammys past weekend. Marty O'Donnell and Mike Salvatore, the original Halo and Bungie composers, Mike still being there as part of the team. Yasunori Mitsuda, the original composer of Chrono Trigger, Chrono Cross. Sam Hulick and Jack Wall, the two of the core composers of Mass Effect franchise. Sarah Schachner, who's done many things, not least of which about half the Assassin's Creed franchise. Jesper Kidd, the original Assassin's Creed composer. Russell Brower, Neil Akery, and Matt Uelmen, who is the kind of three pillars of the longevity of Blizzard games. Glenn Stafford being the current lead composer. Nobuo Uematsu, who for many people is like basically God on Earth, the original Final Fantasy composer. Grant Kirkhope, you know, the original composer for Rare, Banjo-Kazooie, GoldenEye 64, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. James Hannigan, who I think is a real underappreciated gem. He's essentially one of the first guys to really create amazing interactive music systems, and he made them from scratch, which is incredible. Bear, who of course was nominated, but Bear has been was involved in games long before God of War, and he actually really cares and he plays games. And a lot of game composers complain about film composers coming in and scoring games and not really caring about games. And Bear is not that way. Bear may be a big well-known name in the world of film and TV. The fact that he had Rings of Power come out alongside God of War Ragnarok proves it, but he really cares about games and he plays them like a normal gamer. He's a nerdy gamer like the rest of us. Gary Scheinman, BioShock composer, Gareth Coker, Ori and the Blind Forest, and many games since Ark, Survival Evolved. Jason Graves, the original composer of Dead Space, and many others, and a real close friend. Olivier de Rivière, composer of the Plague Tale games and many, many others, recently Dying Light 2. Yoko Shimomura, the original Kingdom Hearts composer, Darren Korb, Supergiant's composer, my dear friend Jessica Curry, BAFTA winner for Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, the original trio from LucasArts, Michael Land, Clint Bajakian, and my friend and hero, Peter McConnell, and last, the godfather of game music, the original Mario and Zelda composer, Koji Kondo, who still is an important composer. That's the list that I thought, you know, these people all would have been up at bat for a Grammy if this had existed when their, you know, the thing that they released that really sent shockwaves through the world came out. You know, if this category had existed for as long as games have existed, I think every one of them would probably have a Grammy or at least a nomination, probably multiple nominations, and all deserve it. So while it's nice that it's a new thing, you know, some of these folks, for example, like Marty and Russell, I believe, are effectively retired, so they'll never have that.
Wow.
Chance Thomas is someone I didn't mention, but he's also just retired and written many big scores, Lord of the Rings Online, et cetera, Avatar. And it would be nice if they had that chance.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I know that took a minute, but that's something I've been thinking about a lot ever since this category was announced, of like the people that have already laid this foundation, and it's worth there being some of their names. There's many more people I could name, of course.
Yeah.
But I just thought these are some of the ones that have helped. If nothing else, those are some of the people that have helped really shape my personal experience of working in games. different composers would list different names. And there's, like I said, I don't want it to feel like I'm intentionally leaving anybody out. That's always a challenge when you start right. listing people. Mm-hmm. But anyway, all right.
Yeah.
I've said my piece. See you next time. Bye.